Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you joined us today. We are going to present some great wisdom. I think so, anyway. I've got some wise people that are along for the ride, and it's J.J. West and Dr. Jill Hubbard today. We're taking calls, 1-800-229-3000. But Jill, listen, I think you're one of the wisest women. Steve says that all the time. And
according to Steve,
and he knows a few things, I would love to hear what is on your mind today. What can you share with us?
Well, I've been thinking about the idea, and I know when we were on together last, I was thinking about this idea along with some of my clients about a term that's been around now for quite a while, and that's codependency. But I've been thinking about it in terms of how it dovetails with mothering as well as being a Christian. And I work with some of my female clients on this because the lines can get very blurred and be very confusing to people. And first of all, I mean, I said most people are familiar with the term codependency. It really arose out of the late 1970s and was in the recovery movement and in relation to someone having someone in their life who was an alcoholic or an addict. So it was like the co-addict, the codependent. And that's where it started. Over the years, it has broadened. I remember early on in my practice, one woman said to me, "You never told me I was codependent." I'm like, okay. Well, okay. First of all, it's not really a diagnostic term that we put, you know, that we find in our diagnostic manual or that we use for insurance or anything like that. It's a descriptive term that talks about how we care for ourselves and others. And a lot of times people get into that role of trying to get their own needs met by meeting the needs of others. And it's a really easy thing for mothers to fall into, because what is our role? We are caregivers. We are raising the next generation. We are just wired to sacrifice and to give. But what happens along the way is that a lot of times we subvert our own needs and we give at our own expense, right? That isn't good for the other person, for our kids, or for ourselves. And so kind of the adage has been, and you've heard us say this a lot, that we, of course, age appropriately, don't want to do for others what they need to do for themselves. So early on in life, kids do need to be dependent. They need to get as much as possible, right? And that we allow them to start doing for themselves a little bit at a time. We allow them to feel frustration so they will have to figure it out. We don't want to rescue them and coddle them throughout life, because then we end up with adult children who can't do anything for themselves, right? And we have moms that are really beraggled, right? It's exhausting. And so I hear the music, so I'm running out of time with these thoughts. But I think that one of the distinctions I try to make with my clients, it's okay to be a mom. It's okay to care. It's okay to do. But let's look at the line between helping and when helping isn't helping, or when helping is actually hurting. And let's look at how we get our own needs met first so that we can be better helpers and we can see the boundaries that we need to set. But by all means, do not give up being a kind person or a Christian that does things for others. I mean, sometimes we just do things for others because we want to and we care and it's unexpected. And that's a good thing.
I love that, and I love just that thought process to be aware where we're crossing that line. We're going to be right back taking calls after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Artimer with a New Life Moment. Cliff was a mild-mannered man until one fateful summer day. He set the controls of his year-old lawnmower to start and pulled the cord. Nothing happened. Finally, after countless attempts, the mower roared to life. But before he could take one step, the mower died again. After several more full attempts, Cliff straightened up, turned, and walked into the house. Moments later, Cliff calmly returned to the mower, slid several shells into his rifle, took aim, and proceeded to riddle the machine with bullets. His wife Janice, who'd witnessed the entire affair from the kitchen window, stood amazed and frightened at the rage lurking beneath Cliff's quiet, confident exterior. Perhaps you can relate to Cliff's anger and frustration. For tips on how to deal with anger, minus the rifle, visit me, Steve Arterburn, at newlife.com. And thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I hope that you're not like Cliff and aiming at your lawnmower, even though this is the time of year when we get them out. But you know what, Jill? It actually kind of coincides with your thought, you know, because a lot of times when we are being codependent, we get frustrated because somebody won't do what we want them to do.
Oh, absolutely, right?
And, I mean,
we think we know best for someone else, right?
And yet,
if you would only listen to your mother.
Exactly. we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
we're grateful for Steve's wisdom and his wit, and it makes me laugh all the time. But we're going to go to the calls now. We're going to talk with Chuck. Not to be confused with Cliff, who's calling us from Central Maryland and listens on WAVA. Hello, Chuck. We're so glad that you called. How can we help you today?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the little advice. I never thought of shooting my lawnmower with a shotgun. I'm really going to take that into consideration.
Yep.
That's just genius.
Oh, let's give you some better advice now, Chuck. What are you calling about?
Okay, I'm trying to make a long, 10-year, 20-year long story into a phone call, but both my wife and I are disabled, and she's bedridden, so even though I have heart failure and kidney problems, and then it seems like they always expand because, like, they tell you to drink less water. And then your nephrologist says, oh, my gosh, it's killing your kidneys. And, I mean, and I get internal bleeding. And then that makes me anemic. And, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to live that long, but I'm going to try to. But anyway... my family is completely dependent on me because basically, I mean, I do everything. I pay the bills. I bring my wife food. I take care of everything. And I don't mind that because she's my life partner and I'm happy to help her with whatever she needs. And the other problem is, though, my son is approaching 30, and he never launched, but I'm now realizing that he's not just a lazy gamer, which he is a gamer, but, like, I think he's on the autism spectrum because, like, he can't touch paper towels because he's just completely adverse to them. He can't brush his teeth because it just gags him, and he'll just throw up if he does it. And he really hates to leave the house, and I've been working on that. And I've actually got him once a week to go to church, so there is some progress. But I'm afraid that I could pass away and leave them completely... unable to deal with life, and then I'm just gone. I'm floating away in heaven and just having a great old time, and they're going to just fall apart. But I guess I'm asking for some sort of help with my son because he does not seem autistic, and if I, even mentioned that he's mentally something, he would get, take it as an offense because he's above average intelligence, and he just has these weird little things like he can't touch paper towels. Okay. He can't eat most foods. He hates driving anywhere, because he says he gets so car sick and he like is almost in a panic. But I can get him to drive the 5 minutes to our local church. But I was wondering, I mean, where would a starting point be? Because I don't want to just bring him in for a counselor that says, you know, son, you need to get a job, you need to get an education. Which is true, well, but I mean...
Chuck, it sounds like there's a lot going on with everybody, and you're carrying it all. JJ, how would you begin to help Chuck in this situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right, Becky. There is a lot going on, and obviously, Chuck, you know that. You're living in it. You know that there's so many different needs that you're trying to meet. You're kind of the proverbial plate spinner running from pole to pole trying to keep everything going here, which is exhausting. A couple questions for you. One, does your son want to launch? Does he want to be out on his own, or is he comfortable staying with you? And if that's the case, are you comfortable with him staying with you?
Well, if he stays with me, I'm going to go away. Because, I mean, one of my things is I'm my own caretaker. And, I mean, I'm stage 3 heart failure. And, I mean, I just could go over the list, but it doesn't really matter. I just know that my life expectancy is whatever. You know what I mean?
It doesn't look like it's going to be super long at this point.
It's not super long, and it's not guaranteed. I mean, I could have a bad day today and end up in the hospital, which I do all the time, and somehow they manage, but I come back to how they managed, and
there's a big mess to clean up.
My wife ordered a bunch of stuff in management, I ordered a bunch of stuff from Amazon,
I think a couple things need to be addressed here.
Try to survive for 1 or 2 days. It's like way hard for them to survive. So if I was just gone, you know what I mean?
They're not going to be able to function on their own for a long period of time. They can get by for a day or two, but the way that they get by is not tenable long term. And so what we need to do is get some services in place, especially while you are alive, while you are able to, you know, help and make decisions. It's going to be really important to get some support services in place. That may be through your county, through the health department, through whatever your local department of children and families type of thing is there, but to talk to them to say, you know, here's our situation. We need to get some in-home care that's going to provide, you know, some cooking, some obviously medical care for your wife who's bedridden. But then also there's going to need to be somebody who can step in as a financial, like a trust that is set up so that there's ongoing ways to pay the bills and get food and all of that that isn't accessible to your wife and your son, who may not be right now, and maybe not ever, but certainly not right now, able to make the wisest financial decisions. So I would definitely look at what are the social services available for kind of primary care in terms of health and medical and feeding and all of that. But then what are the services in place, or what kind of trust can be set up so that there's ongoing financial care to make the decisions that they're not currently able to make?
Yeah, I love that.
Well,
JJ,
you have said almost my plan verbatim things, except for, like, I don't know who to call to get some sort of Department of Social Services. Like, what would I Google to even get connected to the right person?
It's the county. Yeah.
It takes persistence.
Yeah. Whatever county you live in, just, you know, you would want to look up that county's either health department, social services, children and families, something along those lines.
I'm writing this down. Just give me a second. I'll write a bridge. but I'm trying to make notes to where I can.
Okay.
Department.
Well, and Chuck,
we can give it to you offline too.
We can give it to you. Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, Chuck. We can give that to you as well. And the one thing I wanted to say about your comment, Chuck, about your son, you know, I loved, JJ, that you asked, does he want to stay there? Is it okay with you? You know, just assessing, because multi-generational living is not wrong. I mean, it, you know, it's just what people do, but it's also, we want him to thrive in the best situation, and it may not look like somebody else's. But Joe, what would you suggest for
Chuck's
concerns?
Well, Chuck, first of all, I just want to say you're amazing. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry with all of your health issues and that your heart is failing, but you do have an amazing heart too.
Yes.
And a love for your family. And that you're able to kind of keep all of this afloat. And it seems like, you know, your family has just been plagued with all of these disabilities. And your son has grown up in an environment where people have to deal with, you know, more extreme health situations. And so there's a part of him, it sounds like, that does identify with all of that. You have been able to be the person who is their strength and that they depend on. One of the things that, you know, we don't get to choose how long we're on this earth and when we're going to leave. But when people are pulled out of a group situation, the dynamics change. And people that you thought could not do anything for themselves often do step up when the strong person is no longer there. And I'm wondering with your son, I mean, certainly him being able to launch and be on his own and have his own life is more ideal. But there are people who, like, I'm wondering, once you're gone, will he do some of the caregiving for his mom? And there are situations where that's just necessary and it works. I love everything JJ said. I do think you need resources. I think you need to start talking about to your son and your wife, and maybe you already have, about the fact that you are aware you won't always be here and that you want to help equip them. And so you have to talk about death and what's going to happen and what you want and where things are. Like, you start preparing them. It's one of the most loving things you can do to start handing the reins over. Go ahead.
Would you mind if I interrupted you a little
bit? Sure, sure.
Because I'm not getting as much as I wanted out of this phone call, because you're kind of reciting verbatim what I'm currently doing.
Okay. So you are already trying to prepare them.
Yes. But
okay.
Like, one of the stumbling blocks is I need to know if my son is on the autism spectrum, if he has a disorder that he can't touch things and hear certain sounds. Mm-hmm. Is he, I don't know the word for it, but when you're housebound, is he like, get out of the
agoraphobic house? Is what you're talking about. Yeah. Chuck, I want to say, here's the thing. It doesn't matter what the diagnosis is. It is recognizable that he is struggling with something. And your connection with him to recognize these things are a problem. It could be everything from anxiety to autism and a million things in between. It also is him dealing with the stress of the household situation and not being able to get out of his own way, basically. But I think if you come alongside of him with empowerment, not trying to fix him, you recognize this, he recognizes this, it will help. He is in defense mode. So the world is coming at him. There's a lot of challenges and we need to empower him. And we can connect you with a therapist in your area. We get tons of great people in that area that could even work with him on telehealth. We are going to be right back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. As I said to Chuck before we left, we're going to send you we're going to get you connected with a counselor in your area to help you with some of this. And, you know, we encourage people, when you're in a situation like Chuck, there are county agencies that are equipped to help you. And so, you know, call your county where you live and then ask for those people that can help you. The other thing is we're going to send you a copy of Conquer Worry and Anxiety by Dr. Daniel Amen, which may address some of the things that you're talking about with your son. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to send you a copy of Living Strong, Finishing Well by Dr. Dave Stoop, because Dave did, I mean, it's such a great book. And I think it'll encourage you, Chuck, as you are managing all of these things. And, you know, we're going to pray for you, Chuck. We're going to pray for your family in these days.
And Becky,
you know,
can I just add along with the county services? Cause I know, I mean, that's a great resource, but it takes persistence.
Yes.
If you have insurance, then a psychiatrist, and I mentioned that before, could be a starting place just to get kind of a diagnostic handle. And then if there is autism there are young adult groups that work with people and help them develop the skills they need. And that could be an option as well.
Yes.
It's really,
go ahead, JJ.
I was just going to say the testing is so important. Mm-hmm. We can't just go on what we think it might be, what it seems to point to. We need to do the proper assessment. And in the same way that Chuck had to go and see all those different specialists to diagnose his medical condition.
Exactly.
Right? So his son needs to go to some specialists to diagnose what might be going on for him psychologically so that they can get the appropriate treatment, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's not a mark that I've got to carry around forever. It's this is something that I deal with, and now I'm getting some help to make me more productive in life.
Right. I think it's so spot on. And Chuck, I know in the list of things that you have to do, it is a concern, but if you engage with the people that can help you in this way, your son he'll receive it. It'll be a struggle. It will be a struggle because the anxiety is real. It's, you know, disturbing those routines, but in the long run, it's going to be, what he needs for the long term. So we're so glad that you called. And again, we'll be praying for you. We're going to go back to the calls. And we're going to talk with Alina, who's calling us from Las Vegas and watches on YouTube. If you are part of our YouTube watchers and listeners, you can click that subscribe button and that like button. It gets the word out to so many people. Alina, how can we help you today?
Hi. I originally was calling because I suffer with chronic pain. But then I heard you guys talking about codependency. So I struggle with some codependency issues because I do live with my mom. I'm in my 30s. And so, she's my PCA. She takes care of me. But I was going to ask, what's the difference between going to a chiropractor and pain management? Because everyone's been telling me, go to a chiropractor, don't go to pain management. And then I was just wondering, like, what's the difference? Like, why is pain management so bad and a chiropractor so good?
Well, that's a good question. Good question, Alina. JJ, do you want to take a stab at this to begin with?
Sure, I'll do my best, not being an expert in chiropractic care, other than as a recipient. I wouldn't actually differentiate. Chiropractic care is a form of pain management. Mm-hmm. There's other ways to manage pain. There's the medicinal, right, taking different medications to manage pain. There is rest and relaxation to manage pain. There is exercise to manage pain. There's chiropractic care. There's stretching. There's all these different ways that we manage pain. So I wouldn't differentiate, there's either chiropractic care or pain management. There's just different ways to manage pain. Mm-hmm. What you, I think, have to decide is what is the best path for managing pain for you, right? And so that may be a combination of several things. There may be medication involved. There may be chiropractic care involved. There may be stress reduction involved through counseling or through meditation or through taking long walks or whatever. But you have to explore the different ways that we manage pain to find out the combination that's going to work best for you, your body, and what makes sense to you spiritually and emotionally as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and since, Jill, you started with the codependency talk, maybe you can speak to Elena about that issue that she may be dealing with.
Well, before I do that, I just want to add on that, Elena, a lot of times we're looking for the answer. What's the one thing that's going to be the answer to my problem and solve everything? And there's usually mm-hmm. never one thing. And so I think with what JJ's describing, if I were in chronic pain, I'd be trying everything possible, anything that I thought could help with the pain, because resigning oneself to that, you know, really inhibits life. And then it puts you in this position of being more dependent. And so you also have to look at, okay, do I like being in this position where I'm in my 30s, but I'm still like I'm a child at home in need of caregiving? And if at all possible, to be able to change that and further your life, oh, that would be so much better.
Yeah, I think that's true, Elena. And I think that if you aren't already working with a therapist, that will also be part of that plan. Like you said, JJ, it's not one or the other. There's multiple things. And you can do this. We'll be right back.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope, and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are going to send Elena a copy of How You Think Determines the Course of Your Life. It's by Laura Manja McDonald. She is our speaker at our Restore workshop, as well as our Intimacy and Marriage. And in this book, she covers the whole gamut, everything from the neurological to the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of how we do think. It makes a difference in mm-hmm. so many ways. I will be praying for you, Elena, and I know that this is tough, but we look forward to hearing back from you and how you made those steps forward. We are so excited to offer our matching gift. We are so blessed by so many people who believe in the ministry of New Life, who are changing people's lives through the radio program, through our counselor and coaching network, in so many ways, and they do that through their gifts, and we are so grateful. And now we have this matching gift campaign. That means that every dollar that you give will be doubled. We have a group of donors who started the seed, and we are up to $400,000 that if as you give and we double, we make that match of $400,000. It gets to be used in so many different ways in the ministry, and you're impacting the lives of so many people. We hear about testimonials all the time where people say, you know, I've listened to you guys for years and you have really changed our lives. And I just want to say to you givers, to you donors, to you who are providing, you are making that difference. And I just mm-hmm. want to say thank you. If you want to be part of the match and change people's lives, you can call us 1-800-NEW-LIFE. And you can also go to newlife.com/donate. As well as text the word match to 28950. We want to thank you in advance for how you're going to support all the different things that we are doing in the ministry. Right now, we're going to go back to the calls, and we are going to talk with Kim, who's calling us from Oakland, California, watches us on YouTube. We're glad that you do. Thank you, Kim, for calling. How can we help you today?
Yes, good afternoon. Hello to everyone on the panel. Yes, I'm calling because I have my niece who is married to a man that we all love. We really like him so far. They haven't been married a real long time. It's less than a year. But we do like him. We're trying to get to know him, but he does not make that easy because when we have family events that we invite both of them to, he may come, but he always has a reason why he has to leave early. It may have to do with work. Another time he had a headache. You know, there's always an excuse. And then most recently, this past Resurrection weekend, we were all together and at their church, and there was a dinner after to eat, and we were in the fellowship hall, and he was there for a moment, and he said, oh, I must go home and get this check for someone that I promised I would pay them. It was so random, and it was, again, a reason for him to go. Well, what happens is when I see the sadness in my niece's face when this happens, and also when she wants to do something with us, he has a reason that they have to do something. So then he kind of alienates her from doing things with the family. But when his family wants to do something, they must go. It's a must. There is no, you cannot go. You must come. So we're starting to get a little concerned. Are those signs of him being controlling, or, you know, we're just kind of concerned a little bit for her with that area because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of compromise.
That is a challenge. Gigi, how would you help in this situation?
Well, Kim, there is good reason to be concerned. There does seem to be some controlling part of this and what seems to be kind of a self-centered, like it's okay if it's my family, it's not okay if it's your family. There could be any number of reasons why this is happening, though. There could be social anxiety that he's experiencing. There could be shame that he's experiencing. There could be pressure from his family that he doesn't feel from your niece's side of the family. And so he, you know, anything on his side of the family feels like a command performance, whereas there feels like there's more freedom, relaxation with your side of the family. There could be any number of reasons why he's displaying these behaviors, but the behaviors themselves are at least worth noting and worth addressing. When you have one-on-one or group conversations with your niece, where when her husband's not present, is she saying the same things that you're saying? Is she saying, I'm seeing this and I'm concerned, or is she saying, no, this isn't an issue?
Okay, so there's two sides to that. There are times where she's saying, yes, I realize that he is being this way. And there are other times where she's like, well, I see it, but I don't want to rock the boat because I don't want to get him upset. And the biggest disappointment right now for us is we have this family trip planned to go all together overseas, and now he has an excuse why they cannot go, and we've been planning it for months, and she's very disappointed because she's not going to be able to see her brother and her nieces and her nephew.
Yeah, so even that answer has some concerns for me. Number one, that she doesn't feel like she has the freedom to make choices. She's an adult. She's not a child, so he's not in control of her life. So that concerns me. And then two, her belief that if she says something that's contrary to what he wants, that he's going to get upset and she doesn't want to rock the boat. That's not the markings of a healthy relationship. My wife and I have disagreements all the time. We don't see the same things the same, and we can talk through that. She's not afraid to say to me, hey, I don't agree with that. She's not afraid to say to me, I want to do it differently than you do. We talk it through, and I'm not afraid to say the same thing to her, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that in and of itself is concerning. I think it would probably be helpful for them to talk with a couples counselor together about what do they want this young marriage to look like? What kind of relationship do they want to have? Do they want to have a mutual where two peers, two adults, are working together to build a future? Or do they want to have a situation where one is in charge and the other one is in a subservient role?
Exactly. And this is another concern for me, you all, is that the church they go to, it's a lovely church, and the pastor and his wife are good friends with her husband. Before they got married, he's been friends with them for the past 3 years that he's been in the area we live in. And everyone in the church adores him, and they adore him. And so they have been going to them for marriage counseling. And when they asked me my opinion, I stressed, you know, I didn't think it was the greatest idea, not because I had anything against them, because they're a lovely couple and he's a great pastor, but I wanted them to go outside of the church to get a Christian counselor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go ahead, Jill.
Yeah, I think that could be a good idea because, again, everything is oriented around her husband. And so for her to, you know, come in and have her own voice, it sounds like it's already very difficult. At first, I was thinking like JJ, his behavior could mean all kinds of things. Even the fact that maybe he's overwhelmed by your family, and maybe all of the family events, or, you know, has a hard time with that. But clearly, there are some issues here. And it's important that your niece, right at the onset here, because they've been married less than a year, not set a precedence of this subservient behavior. And it's difficult. She doesn't want to rock the boat, but why is she worried that he would get mad instead of caring about her concerns? Right? And go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just wanted to say this because she's so concerned about being a good wife. She wants to honor what God says she should be.
Right. But being a good wife, like two people come together, two individuals come together, and yes, they become one as a team, right? But it doesn't mean that one goes mute and that there's only one voice now. Right? You can honor your husband. You can honor the relationship, as JJ was saying. So I think she's taking that maybe to support or kind of hide her fear behind, right? Well, I want to be a good wife, so I don't want to say anything, when really she may be afraid to say something. And so I would really be encouraging her, because she's setting the precedence for their marriage now. And if she doesn't speak up now, it will be harder down the road. And her silence is basically condoning what he does, right? It's saying it's okay that you control everything.
That's right.
I'm okay with that. So
we're so grateful that you're a good aunt, that you're, you know, and to keep speaking life into her, telling her that no matter what happens, we love you guys, and we want you to be able to come to us for support. Because sometimes when it gets tricky like this, he can become the bad guy, and then she's going to protect him, and you don't want to set that up either.
Right.
I'm going to send you a copy of Sacred Marriage by Gary Thomas, and you can give that to her. But we'll be praying. Can't wait to hear how God's going to work in this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, we have an online Every Man's Battle this Saturday, April 13th. And we've got all kinds of intensives to help you move forward in your life. And I think a lot of times when we get in these stuck places, we don't know where to turn. And sometimes you just need to do one thing at a time. So it could be that you just pick the phone call or phone up and call us and talk about one of these intensives, or you go to newlife.com and look at the intensives. You know, just get curious about these things. We also have a nationwide network of counselors and life coaches that can help you along the way. Every Man's Battle online is a rarity. And so I want to encourage you, if you're struggling with your sexual integrity and you're a man, this is the place for you to spend your day Saturday. It's going to be available to all of you. JJ, you're going to be impressing upon them the freedom that can be theirs, the life that is beyond the stuck places. And, I just can't encourage men enough to join in on our online intensive. And there's many different ways that you can connect with us. And so we want you to know about those things. Sometimes we say this all the time and people still don't know that we have all these incredible resources that can make a difference. So, just a last shout out. Now we're going to go to the calls. We got one more call. And we want to give this some time. Jean is calling us from Dallas and watches us on YouTube. Hello, Jean. We're so glad that you called and we want to get to your call. How can we help you today?
I was just calling about my marriage. I'm married to a wonderful man who's very generous and giving, but every day and every night he's out drinking and he doesn't come home. And I've cut. I go through that, like feeling like it's like, what am I doing wrong that keeps him so far away? But I mean, everybody loves him. He buys everybody drinks. He's very outgoing, and then I just don't want to be that angry, resentful person.
Oh, Jean, how long have you guys been married?
A little over 21 years.
And how long has this been going on?
Well, I think he always drank, but he always worked a lot. And look, as like the last 8 years, it's just getting worse. I don't know. I mean, like when he can be so nice and normal, and other times he's always just, I don't know. He just talks really rough to me, and the anger toward me, and then I just don't see him all day or talk to him, and then he'll come home at 1, 2, 3 in the morning, or he won't. Sometimes he brings home his buddies that he's been drinking with. He has a certain bar he loves to go to. He goes there for breakfast, lunch, dinner, drinks. I mean, you know, he's never home. And then when I complain, he says, well, you have everything, you know, because he's a good provider. But just that time and attention that he
you don't have everything. You don't have him.
Exactly.
The alcohol has him. And at what point did your social lives start being separate? Because he has a whole social life that doesn't include you.
Yeah. It's been a while. I just like, even if I would try to join in, and even now when we go to a function or something, he'll stay, you know, and then he'll be like, he doesn't want to leave. Like he never gets enough. Mm-hmm. We go out of town. I mean, he'll stay at the hotel bar. I'll go to the room. I mean, we travel, but it's always just like, he can't stop drinking and he wants everybody to drink with him. So he keeps buying rounds for everybody in the bar so that they'll all stay. And I just, got where, like, and I'm not against drinking, but I just don't even want to be around it. And I don't want to, you know, go sit in the bar and watch him get drunk. Mm-hmm. And then he has his friends bringing him home, you know. I mean, it's really sad.
Well, yeah, and drinking over, you know, this long of a time period, right, that even if a person has a really high tolerance, eventually that starts to switch. Right. And it takes less to get to that place, or they have to drink more and then they're more out of control. And when you talk about the anger and him talking rough to you, that's the alcohol talking. Jean?
Well, when he's drunk, he's usually nicer. It's
okay.
When he's the morning afterwards. He's all happy when he's
drinking. Okay. So he's a happy drunk.
Yeah. Very happy.
Okay. But as it's wearing off, then.
Yeah.
So somewhere in the cycle of drinking, you're getting the angry guy. So these kind of
and
different faces.
Weird. Yeah, because, he goes to church. We'll go to church. Mm-hmm. But then right when we leave church, he wants to go to the brunch and start drinking. And then he'll sometimes drop me off at home and then go with his buddies drinking all afternoon. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, he goes, I mean, and he looks so good and happy.
Well,
you know what I mean? And he'll sit next to the church and he's just reeking of, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's so
Jean,
confusing to me.
Jean, we only have a few minutes left. Let's hear, JJ, how can we get some clarity here?
Well, one of the things, you know, Jean, you said is absolutely true. You said he can't get enough. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true with any addiction. that's what happens, is it keeps promising it's going to give you this satisfaction, but it never delivers. And so you keep needing more and more, and it's never enough. That's why the you know, AA phrase, one drink is too many, a thousand's not enough.
Right.
It'll never be enough. There'll never be enough alcohol. There'll never be enough people at the bar slapping him on the back, telling him what a great guy he is when he's buying him rounds. There'll never be enough out there that answers the question inside of him: am I enough? Am I worthy? Right. It's never going to be enough. And so he'll keep chasing it more and more and more. And eventually it's going to get to a place where there's even more destruction going on in your marriage and in his life. And there needs to be some people who care deeply for him, who can speak truth into his life. That's going to be you. You're going to be included in that list. Mm-hmm. But there needs to be some other people as well, because he's not listening to you. You've been saying for years, I want this to change. I want you to spend time with me. I want you to be with me. I don't want you to be always at the bar. And he's not listening. He continues to go. And so there needs to be some other people in his life that he respects, that he knows cares for him, who can say to him, this is not acceptable. This is not appropriate to treat your wife this way. This is not appropriate to be dependent on alcohol and basically letting alcohol be your God. And right. So I would encourage you to enlist the help of some other people. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Gene, I think you need to say to him, when you drink, I feel lonely and sad and as if I'm all alone in this marriage. And I'm going to go get some help, because this is no longer tolerable or sustainable for me. And then you get involved in Al-Anon, Gene. That's the a first place that's free, and you go back over and over again. Go at least six times before you reject it, right? Mm-hmm. Because you won't get it at first. And then I would also get into some counseling so that you have some support and strength so that you can start to let him know. Because, see, he's very functional, and so he's been able to get away with it. And you're sad. And you know, obviously it's a hard thing to confront, but I think you want to be telling him what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
That's right.
So I think that's an important message to start to be giving.
Gene, we're going to send you a copy of Understanding and Loving a Person with Alcohol and Drug Addiction. I think that'll get you started on this pathway. We're going to be praying for you, Gene, and your husband. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, JJ. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.